Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's my favorite time of the week. It's just gone 7 minutes after 10. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. Our fantastic controller, Craig, on the buttons. Our wonderful producer, Sina Pabetsi, bringing us amazing guests. And our guest today is Dr. Fahiza Patel, clinical psychologist renowned for her work in pediatric HIV treatment, optimization, TB, and COVID vaccine research and maternal health. The 1st to the 7th of August is World Breastfeeding Week. That's why we're chatting to the doc. So let us have your questions on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us on this beautiful Monday morning here from Johannesburg, the 101.9 Chai FM studios. I'm joined by Dr. Fahiza Patel. Doc, thank you so much for joining us on such, really, I think for South Africans, such a vital, vital topic.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. Yes, very important topic for our country and the population, and especially with the numbers of patients that we have living with HIV.
And so many people, so many young families, when they start, they have the luxury of saying, hey, do we go with formula or do we breastfeed? Do we do a mix and match of both? But for many South Africans, it's not an option. The cost of formula is just too much for them to bear, and breastfeeding is really the only option. Given HIV levels in our country, what are the latest guidelines or understanding of the levels of HIV, and how is that affecting breastfeeding moms?
Yeah, so I mean, South Africa's had previous guidelines in relation to pregnant women and women breastfeeding who are living with HIV, and those guidelines included formula feeding. And after some research and looking at the number of deaths, for example, that were occurring secondary to bottle feeding and diarrhea and other infections, we reevaluated the actual risks related to formula feeding compared to breastfeeding. And in terms of the amount of work we had done to suppress women's viral loads with the ART regimens that we'd implemented and the prevention of vertical transmission from mom to baby, we had made much progress. And because of that, it's easier for us to then motivate for breastfeeding in women who are have HIV that's under control. Right. And breastfeeding has a lot of positives compared to formula feeding. So that just made sense. So in terms of the new guidelines, I was at the IAS conference last week, and the previous guidelines from WHO have said that across the world, in first world countries, formula feeding is what is expected to happen in a HIV positive mom. The new guidelines from last week have gone the same way as South Africa's gone, and have now focused very much on breastfeeding against formula feeding for the same reasons that we have done for the last few years. So interesting guideline changes across the world.
Wow. And South Africa leading the way with our research.
Definitely.
And I think that's something that we can be very proud of. And people should actually be quite proud and confident in as well, the level of expertise that we do have in the country. Doc, what I wanted to just go a little bit deep on, can we touch on sort of the idea behind the guidelines, where they originated, and then what brought on a little bit in more depth the change?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the positives of breastfeeding are enormous. Breast milk has a very different consistency, and the composition of it is very different to formula feeding. You're never going to get a formula milk that's going to have the equivalent of the antibodies and the protection that's within the mother's breast milk. So the mom has had infections previously and has made antibodies naturally. And those antibodies, for example, to various levels will be secreted into the breast milk, and the baby gets protection from those antibodies in the very early stages of the baby's life. Babies, when they are very small, have very immature immune systems, which is very, very much related to the reasons for us instituting injections from very early in life, mm-hmm. as we're wanting to always protect these babies at their most vulnerable age. And so the breastfeeding has many components, depending on what infections the mom has had in her life, that you will never get from formula feeding. And the early days of breast milk, the colostrum, the early milk is filled with all of this goodness, and it will never compare to a formula milk.
For sure. How do we then ensure the safety in terms of the potential of transmission if we're first looking at HIV, and then I'd like to go and chat a little bit later in the show perhaps about TB-affected households and so on?
Yeah. So spread of HIV via breastfeeding has been shown to be limited to moms who generally speaking, are not virally suppressed. So if you've got a very high viral load for various reasons, maybe you've just recently been diagnosed with HIV, or you've only in the last 2 to 3 months potentially started ARVs and your viral load's still going down, or you're on ART, but you're not necessarily taking it as well as you should. And these are called high-risk, potential high-risk moms who are watched extremely carefully. The South African guidelines in terms of HIV management for pregnant women, the National Department of Health guidelines, are very much based on the WHO guidelines, and are quite strict and intense in the management of pregnant women specifically, because our country focuses very much on improving maternal and child health, and this is a very important aspect. So what we essentially do from early on in starting ARVs is making sure that maternal viral loads are low. So moms who are pregnant and breastfeeding have an increased number of blood samples taken compared to what a person who's not pregnant will have. So if you're taking your ARVs well, you'll have an annual viral load. But if you're pregnant and breastfeeding, those are much more frequent to maintain viral suppression and ensure that the baby is being kept safe, firstly by having a low viral load in the mom, secondly by breastfeeding, and thirdly by giving HIV prevention medication to the baby. So it's a three-pronged approach to preventing HIV while maintaining the amazing nutrition from the breast milk.
I'm sensing, Doc, you're a bit of a fan of the breastfeeding option.
Yeah, we've seen it for many, many years. We saw the difficulties with formula feeding. I've been doing this for 15 years. So those little ones, moms struggled to supply the breast milk. It was expensive, even when the government was trying to assist with supplying the formula. It wasn't always in stock, quite difficult and to procure and to ensure that we had enough on site in order to provide for everyone. And then what happened was people were mixed feeding, and that wasn't necessarily the most appropriate thing to do. So having it in a way that's easier for the mom to do, less expensive, better nutrition for the child, and maintaining viral suppression and the health of the entire family is a much better approach.
100%. That's absolutely fantastic. I'd like to talk about the practicalities. So you have a young mom coming in. She's perhaps believes that she's pregnant. She's coming for a test. What are the processes and then the protocols that are followed, the guidance that is followed in terms of tests? And then if she does test positive for HIV, what is the process for her in terms of education and just what is the steps that she follows through childbirth?
No, quite a complicated question because there have been many mistakes along the way. So one of the most important things that we promote is early booking at the antenatal clinic. So if you think you're pregnant, it's always best to confirm that pregnancy and book as early as possible. The promotion for that has been increased the last few years because we've had many issues with late bookings and by the time complications have already set in. So if a mom comes in newly diagnosed as being pregnant, she will have a number of blood tests done at her first visit. One of them is a rapid HIV test, which is essentially an HIV test that is done in real time and can be resulted on the day. If her HIV test is positive, she has confirmation of those blood tests done, extensive counseling before the test as well as after the test, and initiation on ART on the same day. And this is a massive step forward for HIV treatment in our country. Other bloods that are done are related to other STDs, such as syphilis, hemoglobin. So that's very important to make sure that she's got enough blood to give oxygen to the baby, and TB tests, because our country is firstly a high TB burden country, and secondly, the rates of HIV co-infection with TB are also very high. So that's always something we need to make sure that the mom doesn't have, because that requires very specific treatment. And then obviously she's seen at regular visits with ultrasounds, hopefully at least once during the pregnancy. And for HIV specifically, the most recent guidelines have included a viral load at delivery and infant blood tests for HIV at birth. So very important to diagnose it as early as possible.
Thank you for sharing. I know it was quite an intense question, but you explained that fantastically. We're just going to go to an ad break. And when we come back, I'd like to touch on the TB element and TB affected households.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting with Dr. Fahiza Patel, clinical scientist renowned for her work in pediatric HIV treatment optimization, TB, COVID vaccine research, and maternal health. Let us have your questions for the doc on 061-895-1019. It is World Breastfeeding Week, and that's why we're covering this vitally important subject. Doc, just before we went on to the ad break, we were chatting about the process that is followed, and thank you for explaining that so well. But the reason that I wanted to ask it is that it may seem a little bit overwhelming. Where do people start? How do they get started with this? And just before we go on to chatting about TB affected households, I just wanted to get your sense with the time that you've been practicing. How good is the South African process for new moms? How unintimidating is it, if I could ask that, for potentially expectant moms?
Yeah, so South Africa's doing much better than we had done previously, but we have taken quite a significant knock in terms of staffing with the recent PEPFAR and USAID funding losses. But the teams that work within the facilities, specifically in the public system, are very passionate about what they do. So even under very difficult circumstances, they continue to be as positive as can be in order to make that experience for the moms as positive as possible, especially for a new mom, and definitely especially for a mom who's young and inexperienced and doesn't necessarily have the support of her family around her on a regular basis. But pregnancy in itself is a difficult process. At any age, especially if it's your first one. We do have some support systems for moms who are pregnant. There's quite extensive health talks and other advice that's given before you actually even start your clinic visit. And there are always moms around you that have had these experiences that can give advice along the way. So it becomes a bit of a community experience while you're there.
I love that point, because if it's your first time, you're a little bit nervous, don't know what to do, reach out to other moms that have been down that process, because the support is yeah. great.
So just to mention, in terms of the other support, the Department of Health has actually been really good, and there's a digital health platform called Mom Connect, which you can sign up for when you fall pregnant, either by WhatsApp or SMS. And you can engage on a regular basis outside of antenatal clinic care visits with someone who can guide you around whatever questions it is you have around your pregnancy, TB, HIV, other infectious diseases around pregnancy. And 90% of people actually have been engaging with this platform. And it's great to see we're moving into a digital age. People need to take that up and use the opportunities to engage outside of clinic facilities.
Doc, you just preempted my next question. Thank you. That's fantastic, because I was very fortunate enough to work in the inner city of Johannesburg about 18 years ago. And we were actually installing a point-to-point radio network for data and telephone transmission. And the big request there was data for connectivity online. And I think for the younger generation, that opportunity to be and to get online and get information online, I'm sure is very much a first step. And the fact you said that there's 90% engagement, that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's the way of the world, and we have to go yep. with it.
Absolutely. Good news. Absolutely. if we can talk about breastfeeding in TB-affected households, how does that work? What are the processes? What is the guidance?
So for TB-affected households, it's very dependent on who the person is that is having the TB disease at the time. It may be someone who's not the primary caregiver of the baby. And in those cases, there are ways to separate that person from the rest of the household. And once someone's been diagnosed with TB and initiated on TB treatment, it's about a month or so before you become non-infectious if you're taking your medication appropriately. And the regimen timeframes at this point in time are much shorter than the 6 and 9 and 12 month periods that it used to be previously. We've made lots of headway with new drugs and shortened treatment protocols. So it's easier to maneuver around that, just depending on the situation and who the individuals are in the household, as well as what the household looks like. You know, some families live in one room homes and yes. separation is much more difficult. So it's very individualized depending on the family situation.
Right. If it's the mom that is infected, what are the protocols there? So you mentioned the month in terms of staying on her treatment. And then would that be the use of formula, or was there still breastfeeding an option?
Yeah, so breastfeeding is still an option. The baby is tested at birth for TB and watched very carefully along the way. And mom's adherence to her medication is potentially assisted by what we call directly observed therapy if she's struggling with taking her medication. So like I said, the benefits of breastfeeding are still outweigh all of the risks. And so if the precautions are being taken and mom is wearing a mask and having all of those precautions in place, then it's easier for her to breastfeed. And often, you know, people who are infected with TB come from very low socioeconomic backgrounds, and formula feeding is not really an option. Mm. So there's quite a balancing act in all of this.
Right. Within the clinics, from your side, is there sort of an education and a training process for the moms who are TB positive or that are potentially infectious in terms of masks, access to masks, and then what is the process for them to follow?
That's a bit more difficult because there isn't a specific clinic where patients who are pregnant and have TB necessarily go to. We do try to separate those individuals depending on how infectious we think they are. And often they're attending a high-risk pregnancy clinic and not necessarily a normal basic ANC clinic, just because they need more extensive care. And it's usually an infectious disease specialist and an obstetrician, a gynecologist who's taking care of that patient in a stricter manner than what a normal low-risk pregnancy would be. And changes are made and adjusted according to the individual's risk factors and circumstances.
Right. If we can touch on the value of, and we have covered it a little bit in the beginning, but the value of formula versus breastfeeding in terms of people making informed choices in potential high-risk households and families. I know we're going on the breastfeeding route, but I wanted to get behind the actual practical benefits so that people can have that information to make a choice.
Yeah, so, you know, so breast milk is obviously attached to mom, so easily accessible, cheap, and so it doesn't cost as much as formula milk is going to cost, is usually available on demand. And the more you actually breastfeed, the more your breast produces the milk. That's how it works. It stimulates the hormones in your brain to produce more milk. So that experience also allows a lot of bonding between the mom and the child. There's a lot of closeness, and it's been shown that the closeness between a very small baby and a mom actually has long-term effects in how they bond with other people and the love and support that they feel through their early childhood. Breast milk also, as I said, has nutrients and antibodies that you cannot put into formula milk. Mm-hmm. So those have benefits that I can't even explain how big they are. But in terms of formula milk specifically, formula milk needs to be mixed in a very specific way. And it has to be with water that's definitely clean and mm-hmm. has to be boiled. And has to be with very specific measurements to ensure that the concentration of the formula is correct. And then you have to do sterilization of the bottles on a regular basis and have supply of the bottles. So this becomes quite an expensive episode, not just the formula, but all the equipment.
And also if your the bottles, transport and travel to get it. Exactly. It's not delivered to the home.
Exactly. And if bottles are not sterilized adequately, the children are at risk of having other infections that are transmitted from these almost foreign bodies. So are at higher risk of having gastroenteritis, etc., which then requires treatment and medication and clinic visits. And so often we see gastroenteritis in small babies, and because they're small, small fluid losses from diarrhea actually impact them significantly, and they get sick at a much quicker rate. So those are the biggest issues mm-hmm. With bottle feeding.
Right. From the mom's side, and we do understand that there is a huge socioeconomic element in this, but what should the moms be focusing on eating and drinking in terms of optimizing their milk and maintaining their health?
Yeah, so a good healthy diet is always just a basic need for mom herself, because if she's not healthy, she's not going to make healthy breast milk. And maintaining lots of fluids, good fluids, that can then make the consistency of the breast milk good enough for the baby to be able to drink. And maintaining a diet that is full of iron, because once you have given birth, you have lost quite a significant amount of blood at times. And iron is important for you to make new blood cells, which occurs every 21 days. And for you to have enough blood cells allows you to be well oxygenated and have the energy to produce all of this yummy breast milk goodness. So all of this is very important. And rest, you know, mom has to rest. So my when I was pregnant, I always used to say, the minute my child went to sleep, I kind of went to sleep with her, because that was the only time I was going to get rest. Yeah. And rest is important for your body to recuperate from all the activities it's had to do with a small child.
I was very fortunate to be sitting with a dear friend of mine who has a six-week-old baby yesterday, and she was talking about, you know, feeding every 3 hours. And I was like, well, can't you give that over to your hubby, you know, just, you know, with to feed with the breast milk in the bottle for a couple of, you know, and you can take a day off. And I just got a look that said everything. So I didn't pursue that further, because understand the lack of rest is a very, very definite thing. We just to divert a little bit in terms of the don'ts for what moms should be having. So looking at smoking, alcohol consumption, perhaps even caffeine consumption, sugary drinks, sugary foods, those type of things. What should the moms be avoiding?
Yeah, that's an important question, because what you eat is essentially what goes into the breast milk. And smoking and alcohol, irrespective of whether you've had the baby or when you're pregnant with the baby, is not a great idea for your own health and for the health of the baby. Alcohol in our country is a big problem, specifically in the Western Cape, and in pregnancy that can cause fetal alcohol syndrome, which isn't the easiest thing to diagnose, especially because it can have some subtle symptoms or no symptoms at all when the child is born. But the child can then grow up to have a lot of complications from the fetal alcohol exposure. A lot of people eat beans and other gaseous sort of foods, and that goes into the milk. And then the babies get a little bit of colicky, stomach isn't too happy. So you have to be very cautious about what you're eating when you're breastfeeding, because all of those things go into the breast milk and affect the baby as well.
And from coffee, caffeinated drinks, those type of things?
The caffeinated drinks and everything in moderation, I guess, is okay. If that's something you do at 5 or 6 cups of coffee by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that's going to give this baby a small tachycardia, which isn't going to be great. So, everything in moderation, and try to keep it as healthy and pure as possible.
Just to finish off on this point, but maybe just to stress how vitally important it is, the sense and my understanding is that if the mom is smoking or drinking alcohol, and not on those two points a little bit more, you almost potentially robbing the child of its full development potential and in its full potential in life.
Yeah. Would that be the best? The first 2 years of a child's life are the most important for early development. That's when a child's brain is being formed and the child is learning how to do simple tasks like sit and stand and fine finger movements and learning how to talk and have bowel control. And so when you cause damage at that early age, you are causing damage to a developing brain and a developing body. And that body it takes quite a while for it to catch up once damage has had to happen. And if that damage is repetitive and consistent, that damage is difficult to repair at a later stage.
Thank you, Doc. We're just going to go to an ad break quickly. And I see Craig has just popped you a message in the notes. Doc, if you could look at that, please.